Hello, hello, beloved listeners, and welcome to another hour of Advanced Living Radio. This is Kenneth Lesser, thrilled and delighted to be your host again today. And you know at Advanced Living Radio, we've made a pledge, a commitment to you to help your lives to grow and to blossom and to just bring forth the best that's within you. And to do that, I daily have a prayer. Heavenly Father, show me the best ways to have the most fun inspiring the largest number of people to easily, naturally, joyously experience vibrantly, exquisitely, healthy, wealthy, passionate living in the shortest amount of time with the least intrusion into their lives so we can all get our needs met and celebrate a global loving community that works for everyone. Ooh, fun. That's going to keep us busy for the rest of our lives and growing. And we want to thank, of course, AdvancedLiving.com for sponsoring this show on a weekly basis. And when you have a moment, you're invited to go. AdvancedLiving.com. Check it out. You'll see an item. We call it a Clark Kent clock with superpowers. It's an amazing little plug-in device that when you plug it in, it creates a pure, beautiful spiritual energy. Some people have called it a guru in a clock. Jack Canfield, Chicken Soup for the Soul, Reverend Michael Beckwith, Star of the Secret, a number of wonderful people. Eva Selhub, who ran the Well-Being Center of Harvard University for 7 years, all love and endorse this. So when you get a moment, check out AdvancedLiving.com and the comfort technology. Well, today we are in for such a treat. If there was ever a time we wanted to really find a path, we're here at the precipice of major change in human civilization, global climate change. There's so much going on. And it's like, okay, well, winning the lottery certainly wouldn't be a bad thing for any of us to do. And for all the rest of us that may not win the lottery and we want to thrive, what if we could start by thriving inside? Well, what a coincidence. We happen to have the author of the book, Thrive Inside, Bill Eager. And yes, he is very much eager to take in the goodness of life and to share it. Bill is the author of 10 books that have sold more than 1 million copies. And he's trained with leading authorities on alternative health care, holistic living, yoga. He's a certified yoga instructor, yoga nidra facilitator, Reiki practitioner, and energy healer who teaches workshops all around the world. And his book, when it was reviewed, they made mention Thrive Inside. It weaves together the teachings from many spiritual traditions, and this tapestry opens the door for personal growth. And the compelling storyline is filled with tremendous insight, inspiration, and profound knowledge. And in this, you get to experience, as Bill did, an encounter with His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, that reveals the compassion and love at the core of all relationships. Ooh, doesn't that sound good? And learn how to access the innate healing intelligence of the energy systems of your own body from one of the great yoga masters of India. So we are just in for a treat. Let's get ready to rock and roll with wonderful Bill Eager. Hello, hello, Bill.
Hello, and thank you, Ken, for that great introduction.
Oh, my pleasure. It's just such a delight to have this book in front of me and your presence, and to have met you recently at a Sunday Yoga in the Park here in Denver, Colorado. And my gosh, tell me why this book titled Thrive Inside.
Yeah, thanks. Well, I'll tell you maybe a little bit about myself first, which is that I've been practicing yoga and spiritual practices for probably about 12 years, a little over a decade. And the great thing about yoga and all spiritual practices is that the more you learn, you actually realize how little you know. So you start to unwrap the onion and realize that this is an onion that is quite endless. So what I started to do probably about 7 years ago is I started to compile and make notes from the teachings of all the great spiritual teachers, the gurus and shamans that I came in contact with, and I've been very blessed to have been touched by some of the greatest living masters that are on the world and planet today. The result is this book called Thrive Inside, which is available today on Amazon.com. All you have to do is go to Amazon and search books for Thrive Inside, or go to my website, thriveinside.net/yogabook.html, if you'd like to get an autographed copy. And as to your question about why the book is titled Thrive Inside, actually, you mentioned that really in your prayer, I believe, is that everything that we experience in our lifetime is regulated by our internal state. And that internal state is partly related to our health, which is, of course, inside our physical body, and partly our internal viewpoint about our own experiences in life. Mm-hmm. So I start the book with a chapter that relates to financial health and physical health, because these two areas of life, finances and physical health, are really basics that form a foundation for our experience of life. And I start with these, even though financial health is considered by many to be an external event, it's actually something that's related to how you feel internally about finances and money. It's your relationship with money, your internal relationship. And all of these things happen from inside our body, our mind, and our spirit. So that's why I really titled the book Thrive Inside. When you achieve that, when you're thriving inside yourself, everything that's outside that manifests around you comes to you in a very natural and abundant way.
Ah, okay. Well, this is important. And so, I know in the first chapter of your book, Let Success Happen, you describe that there's a difference between goals and intentions. Why is this important?
Well, yes, I write about becoming aligned in what you think, what you say, and what you do. And many people, you may know some of these people, say one thing, but they do something else.
That never happened.
or you may think one thing and do something else. And, you know, this applies, of course, to all of us.
Yeah.
And so what happens then is there's an internal conflict, and we want to get rid of that internal conflict. We want to be aligned with what we think, say, and do. One of the most ancient techniques that I explain very briefly in the book, but I teach these workshops around the world, is a technique called Yoga Nidra. And it's a very simple yet very profound technique that takes us to what is considered a fourth state of consciousness. So I'll spend a few minutes, if you're okay with it, Ken, explaining
yes.
how this works.
Absolutely.
So like an iceberg, as much as 80% of our thoughts, our emotions, our actions are really controlled by our habitual patterns that are locked in our subconscious mind. So we don't even realize what's happening underneath in that subconscious space. And these patterns get established through years and years of practicing our own personal attractions to and repulsions of everything from what we like and what we don't like to things we eat, things we do, things we feel, things we wear. But instead of actively thinking our thoughts and lives, then we begin to start to have these patterns think and create us. And as we get older, if we're not very conscious and very aware, we may end up living our patterns rather than living our life.
Mm. Wow, so it's that automatic pilot inside.
Exactly correct. You start to move on automatic pilot, which may feel very comfortable and normal, but it's actually preventing you from being present in the moment and living life in a way that may be more spontaneous. So when you try to use your mind to create change that's not been accepted at the deepest level of your own being, you can usually fail or see very limited success because unconsciously you're fighting yourself. And we want to create a new model where you align with that part of your being that exists beyond the confines of the intellect, okay, which is very hard to do for most of us trained in the Western culture.
Oh, yes. Yes, we've been followed the leader for so long, and now here you are helping us to become the leader of our own lives.
Exactly said. So it's the shift in perspective that allows you to permanently resolve perceived problems and these habitual patterns at their very root. So what we want to do, in a nutshell, is release habitual patterns that bind us and cause us to create the same situations over and over again in our life. We want to learn how to draw happiness from the present moment rather than some uncertain promise of the future. And we want to stop reacting to our life and start living in harmony with it. So in this state of Taraya, that's actually a yoga term, Taraya. It's called the fourth state of consciousness. People are quite aware of the third states before that. The first state, of course, is the waking state, which hopefully we're in right now. The state after waking is the dreaming state, where you go to sleep and you're sleeping. The third state is where you do the deep dreaming and you have all your dreams during the nighttime. And this fourth state, which is rare for most of us, is where you're actually in a deep dreaming state, yet you're conscious and aware. And that's the state we want to achieve.
Is that similar to lucid dreaming?
It's very similar to lucid dreaming, except what we want to do in lucid dreaming, much like in the recent movie Inception, where you're actually just simply aware that you're dreaming. What we want to do is bring our intentions into this state, so we drop intentions into our subconscious mind. So I'll give you some examples. This comes from Wikipedia. They looked at the top New Year's resolutions that people had, and they included losing weight, getting fit, eating right, drinking less alcohol, reducing stress, improving relationships, paying off debt, saving money, getting a better job, and getting a better education. All great topics for people to improve their lives.
Yeah.
What they found is that after 1 year, only 10% of people actually achieved their goals.
Ooh.
So not very stellar success.
No.
And the reason I would say, to your first question about the difference between intentions and goals, is that most people take those ideas and they bring them right into goals. Intentions are something, Ken, that are timeless. With intention, what happens during the process is much more important than what happens when you actually get there. Okay? Mm-hmm. And I'll explain that a little bit further. It's Dr. Wayne Dyer says, for example, you don't attract what you want, you attract what you actually are.
Important point.
It's really a little different perspective on what happens. With a goal, what you hope to get becomes your focus. With an intention, you become the focus. Your intention will actually create a shift in your thinking and your habits that change not only how you perceive the world, but what actually then starts to happen in your world.
Wow, that's key.
And as we start to see this in common language, so I always try to bring it down to a very simple application. A goal, for example, if you're going to make a goal typically uses a future tense, and it requires external validation, whereas an intention is oriented to the present tense and relies on wisdom from within. To give you some examples, say we're looking at a financial goal, Ken. Maybe I've got a financial goal, and the goal is to pay off $200 on my credit card this month, or to get a raise this year. Those are financial goals because they're time-oriented, right?
Yes.
So I've got something on the calendar, and when I reach a certain point on the calendar, I want something to happen. That's not how we really want to play. What we want to do is have a financial intention, and I'll give you some examples of the financial intentions I use related to money. For example, I say, I release my judgmental perceptions about money that create stress, tension, and fear in my life.
Hmm.
I openly accept and rejoice in the abundance and riches that the universe showers me with.
Oh.
Or I am completely at peace and accept myself as I am and the world as it is. Now, you see, I've never even used the word really money in my intentions, but the concept is about financial success.
Mm-hmm.
So all aspects of life, can you can play that same game about moving from a time-oriented goal to an intention that's going to really change your life. The same with if you want to lose weight. If you want to lose weight, it's better to say, I release my judgmental fears about how I appear to others, than it would be to say, I expect to lose 5 pounds this week. You've got very limited success when you put something on the calendar that way.
Yeah, and especially who likes to lose? Like, I lost my keys, I lost my dog. Who wants to lose weight when it's like a, talking about being a loser?
Well, exactly correct.
Good.
So really, we're getting back to the first point that you and I both talked about, which is just changing your lens, your perspective about life. And by changing that lens, your life starts to come at you in a very different way.
Yeah. Ooh, I like it. I like it. So this, so it's like, okay, yes, we keep hearing about goals, but now you're shifting the focus to the intentions that frees us up from timelines. Which is very important too, because then it's like, oh wow, it's getting closer. It hasn't happened. And it's like, so this is an important shift to make. I like that.
Right, and it takes the calendar off the table. So instead of worrying about whether it happens next week, I know with my intention that it will happen, and I'm not stressed about exactly when it will happen. I know for certain it will happen.
Yes, and that's how some of the spiritual teachings talk about in God's time versus our timetable.
Exactly correct. Very nicely said.
Okay. Now, there's all this been out there for a number of years since the movie The Secret about the law of attraction, and you mentioned that also in the book. Can you help weave that in too?
Yeah, of course, Ken. So there's an energetic aspect to attraction. Attraction is a little bit like a magnet. We all know that a north and south pole of a little magnet will attract each other. Well, in life, you give energy to what you love, and you also give energy to what you hate. So attraction is not so much about wanting something. It's not about writing something down on a little piece of paper and putting it in your sock drawer. Attraction starts to come in your life when you have clarity on your life's intentions and you absolutely accept and become the intention you have right now, not in the future. In fact, you must have in the very beginning what you want to have at the end. Otherwise, it just really can't come to you.
Oh, okay.
So your relationship with scarcity and abundance, these are really two opposites, scarcity and abundance, is a manifestation of this universal concept of the law of attraction. And the equation is profound, yet not very complicated, right?
Yeah.
So you may not attract what you want or desire, but you will certainly attract what you are inside yourself. If all day long your internal dialogue, your personal mantra, say, is something like, I don't have enough, this really sucks, what am I going to do? Well, guess what happens? Abundance is not going to be available to you.
Well, let's stop doing that, folks.
Well, another aspect of abundance that we sort of know internally from all of our spiritual readings, but we don't always apply, is the concept of sharing. And this is the law of giving and receiving. It's through giving that you prosper. When you give and expect nothing in return, this ensures that you actually do get something in return. So it's not so much like a business transaction where you get the direct mail piece that says, the children in Haiti need $20, and you go, oh, I better do that. It's more like when an opportunity comes to you to just share from your heart center, and you do that, at that point in time, you will get something back. And that something back may be something that's intangible, like love. It may be something tangible, like money. We don't really know, but
you
will get something back when you start to give more than you worry about what you're receiving.
Because I know Bill doesn't typically stop in the middle of sentences like that. We're going to have to
go forth. So that works very, very well.
Ah. Wow. Okay. Now, one of the things that comes to mind when you talk about receiving, giving, and receiving, it was just contemplating in a meditation about how much have I been able to really take in this receiving of God's love and accepting that. Because it's sort of like when sometimes I think about giving, and it's like, I want to give so much, but what do I have? There's personal issues, there's financial issues, so many things that seem like issues, and yet as I'm taking more time to contemplate that I've been the recipient of this love beyond anything that I can comprehend, it's like, oh, wow. As there's a biblical saying, that I am the child of God in whom, or that we are actually all the children of God in whom God is well pleased, because he gives to us all equally and abundantly in an infinite way. So it's just kind of beginning to open up in me some of this pathway of feeling so much richer because of a love that goes beyond anything that I can comprehend.
Awesome. I mean, you just exactly nailed it, Ken. What it really is just being able to accept that receiving. You know that the love is infinitely available, and the grace is always with you. So it's simply a matter of opening up your spirit to receiving that grace that is always around. It's always there for us. And in yoga, there's this saying that the winds of grace are always flowing, and all we have to do as humans is raise up our sails to accept that grace.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And of course, if we're taking the sailing metaphor out there, if we're on our ship and we want to go somewhere, but we don't raise the sails to receive that and activate the benefit of it, then we just sit and flow with the tide, not knowing where we're going. But when we raise the sail of receiving that love and accept it, that's where we set the direction of our intentions so that we can move forward in our life in the direction that most is pleasing to us.
Exactly. And you know, some people say then if you're using that metaphor, what are these sails? And I would simply say that those sails are simply any type of daily spiritual practice. Whatever your spiritual practice is, do it on a regular basis because those become your sails.
Ah. Wow. So that that's when it's taught, there's a saying, think smarter, work smarter, not harder. And so I think we're having the pathway given to us by dear Bill today, beloved listeners. Wow, this is great. Oh, wow, it's just time for a big, deep breath here, folks. Just take some of this in and allow that feeling of goodness to that's surrounding you, that's within you, to just be present with it for a moment. Just Bill, your path has just been so marvelous to help us. I mean, now where can we get this book again?
Yes, certainly everyone probably has at one time or another gone to Amazon.com. So Amazon.com, search the books for Thrive Inside, two words, or my website, thriveinside.net/yogabook.html.
Okay. Well, this is so good. And now the second chapter of your book is titled Access Health and Healing. So how do we do that?
Well, I specifically use the word access, Ken, because we can all access health, and sometimes this health comes through a process of personal healing. Health and harmony are actually the natural states of where we're supposed to be, not unnatural states as many of us believe.
Hmm.
So if we can tune into the harmony that's available to our body, mind, and spirit, then anything that's related to disease can naturally start to dissipate.
Ah.
And in the book, I talk a lot about shamans. Now, shamans really, it's an unusual word for many people. They think of some kind of, unusual person. A shaman is simply anybody of any type of native origins that has learned the wisdom of the planet and the earth sciences. So there are shamans there are Native American shamans in the United States, there are shamans in China, there are shamans around the world, and they've tapped into some of the healing properties of the earth and plants that are available to us.
Okay. Wow. So it's not something to be concerned about, or not something you have to wonder, well, am I in the right country? It's like all around us.
Well, exactly so. I, as a matter of fact, I had met one shaman. I'd met him when I had a chance to visit Taikal in Guatemala. And he was very learned in the plants of Guatemala. There are something like 5,000 plants he knows. And he knows them as remedies for all the different diseases that people in Guatemala get. And he says that the plants are available to us in our backyard. For example, if you're in the desert southwest of the United States and you get sunburn, it's no coincidence that that's where the aloe vera plants happen to grow, which are very good for sunburn. So the plants happen to grow right in this area where you may have a specific ailment that the plants are there to cure.
Boy, that Mother Nature is pretty sneaky.
Yeah, very sneaky.
That's great. The Reverend Hannah Kroger of Kroger Herbs in Boulder, she was amazing. And one of the things that she made mention of is just like a how to arco is for the immune system in South America from the tree bark. And she said, that, as you were saying, wherever we go in the world, nature has provided the needs, the ways to meet the needs that we have right there. And you're echoing that. That's wonderful.
Yeah, it's fascinating. In fact, I'll read just a little bit from my book about what this particular healer, his name was Francisco, had said about nature, if you'll allow me.
Oh, yes, please.
He says, we're walking together, and he says, you see this tree? And he points to a large tree with smooth brown bark and white spots. He says, the leaves of this tree can be used to make a medicine that eliminates many types of stomach pain. So I reached out and touched the tree. He says, I make it a point to learn as much as I can about all the plants. This is a wisdom that's passed down through generations, and it's for all the people. The plants, he says, are here to cure our illnesses that the people always get. He says, you must understand that oftentimes it's the greed of corporations or the political systems that take power away from the individuals, and that can enslave us. It's the pharmaceutical companies who create drugs, which can be both expensive and addictive. The plants are already in nature and have all the same miraculous powers. So he also says that what's interesting about nature is that nature, by the order of nature, is to create harmony, and that harmony extends to our own personal health.
Oh wow, this is so important. What you're describing, to return. There's this, been this thing: return to nature, return to nature. Now we're hearing about some of the importance of this, because if anyone ever picks up a PDR physician's desk reference and looks, or now modern TV commercials about the pharmaceutical drugs are just fraught with all the terrible side effects that can take place with these things. And I mean, I'm sure a person's not sitting there thinking, geez, I don't know, maybe I should, be nice to have a part of my body fall off or come down with terrible diseases or an eyeball pop out or who knows what, or die of all kinds of these things. It's like, wait, we want health. And then the drug commercials right there in front of us say, well, the chances are pretty good some of you are going to get real sick from this. And you're saying, here, wait, pause, let's go back to nature.
Right, well, exactly. At the end of every television commercial about any pharmaceutical drug, and to be honest, some drugs have miraculous powers that help many, many people. So we can't just across the board say they're bad, but they also do mention many, many side effects that are not particularly pleasant.
Yeah. And that's not typical from going to things in nature. I mean,
right.
There are some things to be careful of, but by comparison, pharmaceuticals certainly have many more negative side effects. So I like the way you're emphasizing us to reconnect with nature and to go to that pharmacy.
Thank you. That's exactly it. And of course, increasingly, we do see specialists that really understand these plants, and that's why I think we see so many different types of herbs and acupuncture. And we see a lot of natural and homeopathic and alternative medicine therapies becoming much more widespread than we ever have in our lifetimes.
Yeah. Now, I'm just wondering, because we're kind of discussing here some alternative, and then when we think of Western medicine, that's kind of like the MD and the pharmaceuticals. And wonder, well, how can they work together? Can you shed some light on that, of what a person can do?
Absolutely. Well, I've got a lot of opinions about Western and Eastern, and really I try to have a very balanced opinion about them, Ken, because they both do things very differently, and they both work in their own specific world. But I find it hard to believe, for example, how is it in the United States that 50 million Americans don't have health insurance, when approximately 17% of our gross domestic product, over $1 trillion, goes towards our health care. And incredibly, instead of being amazingly healthy, 67% of Americans are overweight or obese, and 27% have high blood pressure. So clearly something is a bit amiss here. And I think it's partly the viewpoint of the Western medical system. Western medicine, which is really just a term, it simply refers to seeing disease as a discrete problem in a specific area of our body. So we have a migraine headache, or we have heartburn, or we have asthma, or we have back pain, or we have breast cancer. Whatever the problem is, we have a problem. And this approach sees everything as a problem with a very specific solution. But this itself can create a cascading series of new problems, right? So you find a solution to one of your problems, and right on the heels of that, there's something else that causes that problem. So you never really quickly get to the root of the problem because you're not taking a holistic approach. Alternative medicine, on the other hand, is holistic. So what is going on in the entire person, all aspects of the person, energetic, physiological, psychological, all aspects of you as a human being, and how do we take those aspects and move you towards harmony? Harmony itself will simply dissolve the disease.
Listen to that. Say that again. Harmony itself will what?
Simply dissolve the disease.
Okay, folks. Write that down. I don't know if you're into tattooing or not, but you can just do henna if you want it to wash away. but keep that thought, because that's at the core essence, I think.
Well, as I said, Ken, I think to be fair to Western medicine has come up with some amazing miracles. They're coming up with some great things for Alzheimer's. They're coming up with, polio. Many of the greatest vaccines and drugs have come out of Western medicine. So that approach gives us some things that we can add to our arsenal. So I'm not really for one or against the other. I think both need to be applied in appropriate doses depending upon what issues you're dealing with.
Yeah, trauma care, an emergency care at some of the top hospitals. Oh, my gosh, if someone has an accident, it's probably the finest emergency trauma care that could happen in the whole world. And so for that situation, and to me, it's sort of like, well, let's use what works best for the particular need.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned trauma care. That's no coincidence that you just said that, because one of the shamans I study with says, listen, if you're out in nature and you get bitten by a rattlesnake, well, the very first thing you want to do is get to an emergency room right away. They're going to take care of it. So right away, use Western medicine to take care of that traumatic event. But then the next day, go to your shaman to find out why the snake bit you.
There we go. I like that. So there's a pathway
right.
About the most important thing of Western medicine, and then integrating that, and then okay, now that you're able to be healthy enough to pursue the question, why is this in my life? What can I learn from it?
Exactly. Very well said. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. So this is great. So now we're integrating this. See, folks, when you have an opportunity to be with a person who's spent all these years traveling the world and can get his book, Thrive Inside, how you can integrate so many things and blossom your life. And boy, when you see the cover of that book, you can be the butterfly of your life, just dancing around in the garden of the flowers of the divine goodness that God has provided for us. Oh, so sweet. Now, let's see. We got to go more. I mean, just like as we're talking about all these colorful flowers, I'm thinking about chakras because you write a lot about those, and they're very colorful. Can you tell us what role they play in health and learning?
Yeah, let me just say a few things about chakras, just so we get a basic understanding, and then I thought maybe we would do a chakra exercise with our audience.
Oh, yes.
Because that sounds fun.
Oh, it does.
So chakra itself is a Sanskrit word. It translates as wheel. And so really, if you think about nature again, nature happens to have a lot of wheels. So wheels, we see, for example, hurricanes turn in wheels. I went to an IMAX film yesterday that was showing galaxies and how galaxies spin in large wheels. So the nature of nature is to have these wheels. Well, we actually have an energetic anatomy that is related to wheels, and these wheels are called chakras. The chakras exist throughout our body and are referred to as our energy body. So most yoga texts refer to seven major chakras that people know of. There's actually about 11 major chakras and hundreds of smaller chakras. I'll just review the major chakras so we have a working understanding. There's a chakra at the crown of your head. And again, this is an energy center at the very top of your head. There's an energy center in your forehead. There's one between your eyebrows. There's an energy center at your throat. There's an energy center which many of us have felt at many times in our at our heart center. The back of our heart also has an energy center. Mm-hmm. The front solar plexus, which is about 3 inches below your heart, right between your ribs, and the back solar plexus, those are both chakra centers. Slightly below the navel, there's a center of energy called the sacral energy. And we have it behind the pubic bone, and the final one is at the base of our spine. So chakras differ in size and activity from one person to another, and they change based on what's happening in your life physically, psychologically, and spiritually. Chakras take up and collect energy and transform and pass on this energy. The impeding flow of energy through your body and through your chakras determines, to some degree, your state of health and your mental and your spiritual balance. Energy has an incredible intelligence and affinity to heal. One of the major blocks of the free-flowing energy is our own mind, specifically our ego that builds up and holds on to stories that impede the flow of energy in all these different chakras. So I think all of that is kind of a foundation for understanding how energy works. One analogy for what's seen as the Christian cross is that as we move through life, if you imagine that cross in front of you, as we move through life horizontally for experiences, yet we learn things vertically. So in our own body, we actually have this energetic cross that goes through us. And it's really, really quite interesting. So to get an experience, it's sort of like, if you were studying in school astrophysics and you studied it for 30 years, but you never got in the space shuttle, you wouldn't really know what it feels like to go into outer space.
Right.
So I like to have people have an experience. And what we can do now for just a few minutes is I'll talk people through an experience to feel the energy in their hands. It's a small chakra, but it's a chakra in the palm of your hand.
Okay.
And so what you do is you sit comfortably, make sure you're in a comfortable sitting position. Put your hands out in front of you, just put both hands out in front, and then start to turn your hands right at your wrists. First turn them in a clockwise direction. Turn them about 10 times clockwise, just spinning. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 9, and 10. Now, counterclockwise. Same thing, just spin your wrist counterclockwise. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Now, with your palms again put in front of you, your arms outstretched, just squeeze your hands very tightly together 10 times. So you're making a tight fist from your open hands. Squeeze them together. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Now raise your hands right at your elbows. So you're making sort of a little outwards and upwards motion. Then what I want you to do is squeeze your fists very tightly. Inhale, and as you exhale, just throw your hands down and open the palms, and then bring them back up to a tight fist. We'll do this 10 times, too. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. Now, last but not least, open up your left palm, and with your right hand, press right in the center of your left palm with your right thumb. Just press in there, not too forcefully. You just want to push a little pressure in there. It shouldn't be painful. And release that, and now move to your other side, pressing your left thumb into the center of your right palm. Now release. Now what I'd like you to do is close your eyes. Just close your eyes, sit in a comfortable position, and start to move your hands towards each other. Just slowly be still and be aware and see if you can feel, energetically feel, as your hands start to approach each other, before they touch, see if you can feel the energy between the palms of your hands. And as you start to feel that energy, move your hands a little bit away from each other. So you start to play with it, almost like you imagine a little ball of energy being held between the palms of your hands. So you start to move in and out, and you start to see how far out you can move before, as you feel this ball. And people that are very adaptive practice this can feel a ball sometimes that's as wide as 3 feet. You may start this exercise, if you're new to this chakra business, you may only feel it maybe just a half inch between your palms as they come right close to each other. But that's the exercise, and it's sort of ground zero as to how you can actually start to feel this chakra energy in your body.
Ah, wow.
And I don't know, Kim, you were on the phone, so I don't know if you had a chance to participate in the exercise or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm sure people may feel it a different way. To me, it was just like it was almost like there was a ball there that I could squeeze against if it was a physical ball, and I could just begin to feel a little bit of almost like resistance as the hands were coming together.
Excellent. That's exactly it. Now, that ball of energy, which is one of the smaller chakras, is just in the palm of your hand. All those other ones I talked about are much bigger forms of energy that, again, are invisible and somewhat subtle, but access the energy throughout our entire physical body. And those are the chakras.
Wow. So this is why one of so many, actually, of the different spiritual teachers talk about the meditation, the idea of closing our eyes and some of our thoughts to the external world, and then beginning to discover here where this is right in the palm of our hands.
And
this is tiny compared to these others. It's like, uh-oh, wow, yippee.
Right.
What are we opening up to? Woo!
Well, and as you pointed out, since you really have to go internal, you have to go inside to start to feel these things. These are not external energy things, and it's through deep spiritual practice and meditation that you start to become aware of the energy that's in your own body.
Mm. Wow. So there's one of the pathways to working smarter, not harder, is by taking this quiet time to connect to this energetic that is so much more profound than we imagine that is already within us. Mm. Ooh, there's a tantalizing invitation.
And I didn't really mention it much, Kim, but these are the types of things that I offer workshops on. So if any of our listeners happen to know of a yoga studio or a venue or a church in their area that might be an interesting place to play, I offer a series of 4-hour workshops that show people how to bring these practical techniques into their own life.
Ah, yes. So I know locally, I'll be, I don't know if you've talked to the people at Mile High Church, the Church of Religious Science, a couple of big dome buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And so I will be, with your permission, taking the book in and showing it to one of the ministers. I don't know if they have it yet in their bookstore or not, but this would be something that I know they would benefit from.
I'd be honored. I'd love that church.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that will have my personal recommendation, and I've been attending there for many years. So we'll see if we can open their hearts to receiving this kind of support from you. Oh boy! And listeners, think about where you would want to share this good information. Go to thriveinside.net and get this book, and then begin to think, okay, wow, here's a bright, happy individual in three-dimensional physical form that is spending time with the likes of the Dalai Lama and other spiritual leaders, and we could have him come and bring his presence and his beauty and joy into different trainings and workshops. Wow, I love it. Good going, Bill.
Thanks.
You're welcome. It's another one of those moments of just, breathing it in, just like, take another one of those holy breaths, just to allow this goodness to go to a deeper level within you. And folks, we're just tapping the surface here. We're almost at the end of an hour, and it's like there's a chapter, Nature's Divine Gifts, and you mention what you call the four worlds. I'm wondering if we can begin to just open that door a little bit.
Absolutely. Again, we are just kind of scratching the surface, but I like to play that way, Ken, because as we open people to new concepts, they can explore them on their own or through reading a book or going to a workshop. So the idea of four worlds is that humans have a tendency to believe that we're both at the top of the evolutionary scale on the planet, and that, in fact, anything else on the planet is primarily here for our own benefit. Well, that's not exactly how it works. As a matter of fact, I just read on one of the, I think it was a story on Yahoo, that last week they discovered a series of new species over 2 miles underwater. So there's so many plants and animals that we don't even know about. We are part of the process, part of the ecosystem, but we're not necessarily at the top. The four worlds are really, again, a sort of shamanic view of the world, and they see these four areas. One is the animal world, which includes all of the animals, the plant world, the mineral world, and the human world. And if we break that down a little bit, Ken, I'll give you some examples to further specify what these four worlds are. The human world, everything comes in a series of fours when it comes to shamanic beliefs. The human world is broken down into people that are white, black, red, and yellow. The animal world is broken down into animals that have four legs, birds, swimming animals, and crawling animals, which are insects. The plant world is broken down into fruits and vegetables, trees, grasses, and bushes. And the mineral world is broken down into gems, crystals, sands, and rocks. What's fascinating about this viewpoint of life is that these four different worlds that we encompass are everywhere. As a matter of fact, I guarantee if you looked around your room right now, wherever you're sitting, you or any of the listeners, that all four worlds are present with you. You may have a little plant in a pot. You may have a dog or a cat that's part of the animal world. You may have minerals that are simply composed of part of the infrastructure of your house. Maybe it's part of the plumbing. So these four different aspects of life are always around us. And all we need to do is be more conscious, more aware that there are four worlds that are available to us. And as a matter of fact, when you eat food, of course, when you eat a plant, you eat a vegetable, you imagine that vegetable also has minerals in it. So these four things, these four different aspects of the worlds, are inside our own physical body. And again, all I'm suggesting to people is that we be more conscious of the four worlds, and the result of this consciousness will be that the planet itself will be more sustainable and will be happier and healthier human beings.
Wow. Wow, that is wonderful. And it's just so easily accessible to us.
Everywhere.
Yes. Oh, this is great. Now, I'm also wondering, people that may be traveling, we've got a holiday weekend coming up. Will you be doing anything?
As a matter of fact, next weekend I am going to be teaching at an event at the Shambhala Mountain Center, which is part of the Shambhala series up in near Fort Collins.
Ah, okay.
And we're doing a 3-day workshop actually with one of my teachers, Yogi Amar Desai. He's going to be teaching techniques that relate to yoga, yoga nidra, and a specific form of meditation called quantum breath meditation. And that starts Friday night and goes through Sunday afternoon up at Shambhala Mountain Center.
Ah, okay. And we can learn about that going to thriveinside.net?
Well, probably the best is the Shambhala. You can Google Shambhala Mountain Center. I think the web address is shambhalamountain.org.
Okay. Okay, yeah. And I think you've got also a link on your site under the tab.
Oh, yes,
of
I
workshops.
Do. Thanks. Mm-hmm.
So that's another good way they can get there. Yeah. By exploring Thrive Inside, if you can go and thrive inside, thriveinside.net. Oh, my
right.
Gosh. Layers upon layers of goodness. And as we're thinking of some of this time away, now you have a chapter on creating beautiful relationships, because we're beginning to understand, wow, we've got relationships with God, relationship with these chakra energies. Can you Can you give us some of the keys so our listeners can be aware of some of this creating beautiful relationships that's part of your book?
Well, I like the way you introduced that, Ken, which is that we have a variety of relationships, right? We have a relationship with God. We have a relationship with ourselves. We have a relationship with the four worlds. We have a relationship with energy, and we have relationships with other people. All these are different types of relationships that we encounter really 24/7. And it's just where we bring our consciousness to rest that we realize these relationships are always with us. We have many different types of personal relationships with other people. For example, we may have lovers, spouses, children, or relatives. Then we might have friends or coworkers. But every relationship stands like a container that offers specific teachings about ourselves. I suggest that if you sat in a circle with a group of 20 complete strangers and looked around the circle, there'd be some people in the circle that you would find attractive and other people that you might not find attractive. This is only partly related to their physical looks. Remember, you've never met these people before. So that has to say that there's some type of energetic connection between you and the people that you're attracted to and the people that you're repulsed by. At either end of the spectrum, attraction or repulsion, there's going to be some learning about yourself because your attraction and repulsion comes because you see something of yourself in them, even though you might not recognize that in front. And what I suggest you do in creating beautiful relationships is look at two things. First, look at button pushing. Notice when someone else pushes your buttons, because it's not what they're doing to you that annoys you, but it's your reaction to what they do that's really the problem. They could do the exact same thing to someone else, and the other person has no problem at all with it. So again, you've got a mirror here to look at yourself. Why specifically are you annoyed? If you remove the button rather than the button pusher, you can reach a state of harmony much, much easier. The second aspect is co-creation. Everything we do in our lives, just like this telephone conversation, every single thing we create in life comes because we are co-creating with other people. And this act of co-creation is a very, very powerful act that's actually been given to us as we became incarnate on this planet. It's really a gift from God that we're able to co-create with other people.
Wow. Wow. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. We did not come here to walk this path alone. So this is beautiful, what you're sharing. And I'm realizing that I wanted to give you some time to wrap things up, and I'm going, wait, there's so much more in this book. Oh, my gosh. I don't know if you'd be willing to come back on the show again so we can go deeper into some of these things and actually complete more of what's awaiting us in your wonderful book.
Yeah, I'd love to play again, sure.
Okay. Well, folks...
Co-create again.
Yes, exactly. Play, co-create, be present with this magnificent energy event that we're having here, folks. Get ready. Well, we'll talk to you further so I can look at your schedule, but sometime a Saturday later in September or into October, whatever will be a fit for you, we'll put that on our schedule and invite you to come back, and certainly wanted to have you take a moment just to, if there was something in parting to, as we say, Alvider saying, until we meet again to each other and our listeners, would you please help guide us out into the rest of our day and our weeks until we reunite again?
Well, I think what comes to me is that everybody, every person, every spirit, every soul really deserves to live their dreams. Whatever your dream is, you came into this world as a way to realize those dreams, and there's nothing that should stop you from having that happen.
Okay. Well, that's a beautiful thought to carry us forward. Bill Eager, thank you so much for taking time to share in such a profound and deep and playful way with us. Just wish you a wonderful, wonderful week, and I look forward to your return. And beloved listeners, thank you. Thank you so much for tuning in, for taking time to set aside some of the busyness of the world so that we can be present with each other and in these hours of time and use these as tools to really make our lives blossom. I just want to thank you all so much. And And Bill and beloved listeners, until we meet again, I just say thank you. Thank you, God. And just be present with that love and grace that's within you and call that forth to creating a wonderful moments with yourselves that blossom into wonderful moments with all those things that are around you in the four worlds. Until we meet again, God bless and goodbye for now.